Accession number 11204, Rule 4.
Andy Ferguson, Reel 4. You got to the Falaise area, Mr.
Yes.
Ferguson. What
yes.
happened there?
Well, as I say, the funny thing happened, that I was going past a little schoolhouse, and I saw a woman lying on her back in the front of... She was not a mark on her, a middle-aged woman. And you know, that moved me, that. I don't know why.
She was dead.
She was dead, completely dead. And at the moment, you think that people, civilians, were getting killed. You know, that moved me more than the battle itself did, because, I mean, I was used to the shells. And I passed her, and there was a motorbike in front of me, Donar, and we came to this field. And as he got through the field, the gate, shells come over. And I remember he just jumped off his bike and run, you know. Well, I got into the field, in the ditch, and we were fighting from three sides. Now, I don't know yet where the shells came from, but it was terrible for them. Three sides of the field, shells all around it. Got out. And when you think of you amaze yourself to say, well, how could I get through that lot? You know, how did your mind stand it? How did your nerve stand it? I mean, later on in the battle, when we got as far as Nijmegen, 50 did broke up. And the 6th and the 8th, as far as I know, came back to England. But the 9th had to stop. The bomb-happy ones, as they call, were sent back home. Now, I was one of the oldest men in the battalion, but I wasn't sent home. I was called a key man. That's the army we were putting at the wanted to stop. And we went down to Sittard, and joined the 7th Armoured Division in the 49th Division. And we went straight on through into Berlin with that particular division.
What do you feel were the factors which made some men crack up earlier than others?
Well, I think it's just a limit of people's nerves. What can you stand, you know? I mean, some people were nervous when the first battle commenced, you know, crying, shouting. In fact, one particular night, we were coming down from Gazala again, and a huge column, and a lot of gunfire on the horizon, and the column doubled back, you see. And some shells, only about two or three, came over right in the middle of this column. And I still remember this poor Elijah, mother, mother. And in the middle of the night, it had a terrible effect on people. You know, you must have been mortally wounded, poor lad. Things like that. You know. Them things start to play on your nerves eventually. You know, unbeknown to yourself, that they mount up.
Did you feel as the war went on regarding yourself that... You may not get through it because of the long...
No, never thought of that. That's something you never think of. As I say, you're too young. Death is something that happens to anybody else, but never you. I mean, if you stop to think that you're going into battle and you'd never get out, you'd never go forward. That's what discipline's about, you know.
Did you get to Giel? Were you in the Giel action? The Albert Canal.
Giel, well, Albert Canal, yes. Oh, aye, that was another tough battle. I've got a medal for that.
Ah, well, can you tell us about that?
Well, it's just a medal dished out by the Belgian government for people who was in that particular battle. You know, just across the other side.
But what are your memories of that particular action?
Nothing, really. No, as I say, I can't differentiate between one and another. I know it's disappointing after all these times, but it's funny, man, how can you? You know, it's just a different place, a different name, but the actions are still the same. You held up, they fall back, you fall back, and you advance, or you push back, that's as simple as that. That's all that can describe a battle. I mean, some days you machine gun, or you dive bomb, you know. It's just a matter of course, you just think nothing of it, you just say, oh, thank goodness he's missed. And when you see 30 or 40 Snookers come down on top, you know for the fact that if he has chosen your area, you're dead. Because they never missed. I mean, if the first one missed, the next one didn't. And you look and say, now, where are they going to drop? and you were there. It's the same with artillery. The German artillery, he got used to them. You watch where the first one fell, then the next, then the next, and the next, and you got out of the middle, because that's where all the others are going to come. What we used to call a box barrage. They always did that, the Germans. They always watched where the shells fell.
Was there any particular German weapon which was very difficult to cope with?
Only the 88. We had no answer to that. I remember at Arnhem, I was lying there. We tried to relieve them, our luck. We got captured, well, we didn't get captured, but we got surrounded ourselves. And I saw all these supplies come over. I said, oh, look at that, straight to the Germans. And these tigers in the next field. You know, it's a horrible thing, there's nothing you can do about it. You've got nothing to hit them with. And that when that gun goes off so close, it's a frightful noise. Frack, you know. And, well, you just hope that they don't see you.
Did you experience the Minenwerfer?
Oh, yeah, the Minenwerfer, you got more than a mini. Woof, 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 terrible thing. And again, if you were in that area, you never got out. Because a mortar was worse than a shell. Because when a shell explodes, it explodes upwards where the mortar, it has a flat trajectory across the ground, you know. And then, of course, the divide your mother. Few shells will come over, explode in the air, a few feet above the ground, then things you didn't like. They used to come down beside you. Had some very funny effects with shells. And I remember the smallest lad in my platoon. He was only about 5 foot. He dove into a slip tench, and the shell followed him. The lad was killed and buried. You know, and yet I had one fall at my feet. I had the German half attack, you know, which I commandeered. I used to use it for towing carriers and things when they blow down. And I was standing, I had the American Star thing, you know, Allied Star. And I was standing at the back, and this shell hit the front. It exploded. Didn't even puncture the thing. I didn't feel no blast. And I still don't know who fired it, whether it was a German had seen the Star, or one of our lads had seen it from the sight. You know, it only happened to once. But the blast cleared me.
As the Germans retreated, had your problems with mines?
Oh, yes, I'd every day. Oh, always. I mean, they got so clever with it. I mean, there's one part in France within this particular area, a fortnight, and they used to go up and down to the baths. And about a fortnight later, a truck went up on a mine. What he'd done, he'd put it in a hole and packed it very lightly. And as the trucks went over, it got harder and harder and harder. And in the end, it went up. I lost a few lads that day. Then they had the others with fountain, nice fountain pen or the watches. You open the door, you could see it. You know, that but we've tapped. They even did that with dead bodies in the end. You had to be very, very careful, you know. Then they had this idea of having two holes together, like, you know, about 4 foot deep. And you hide in one to set the man off in the other. And the one you were in used to go up. Very, very clever. Oh, mines were deadly. Aye. That was our main thing to worry about, the carriers, mines. Because the tanks used to worry about them, we just as here. Because, I mean, even on the roadway, you never see it. I always make a point and keep them right on the crown of the road, because normally they were in the verges, you know. And fails, well, I mean, you just cross your fingers and hope to die kind of thing, going across a fail. You never knew, you didn't know where they were, you know. And I mean, there were hectic things in mind, you know, when they go off. I mean, and turn a carrier over, they blow the bottom on quite easy, you know. Where with tanks, and only just blow the tracks off, you know.
What was the worst conditions that you soldiered under?
Worse in what sense, like, I mean, action-wise, or?
Weather, conditions, living conditions.
Over the living conditions, well, I mean, that's something else you got used to. Sandstones, which used to tear your face to bits with the grit or the heat, of course, with a pint of water to drink. That was terrible, and the stuff you had to eat. But no, the lack of it. I often would never survive, really, the lack of water. It was only after Alamein that we really got the seawater to wash with, you know.
In Nijmegen, the conditions were extremely wet there, weren't they?
Oh, aye. But we had billets there. We didn't mind, you see. And I got to know some fellas there. In fact, I was almost locked up there one day because we'd moved down to Siddard, as I said. I thought, well, I'll jump on this motorbike and I'll go back to see friends in Nijmegen, you see, where I was stopped. And I put this one-piece tank suit on. It was something brand new, wouldn't have had before. And when I got into Nijmegen, these Canadian police stopped me. He said, who are you? And I showed him my paperwork. He said, you better come to the office with me. You know. He didn't search us, thank goodness, because I had the Nazi swastika. I had a German leave all that. And when I was in there, this friend I stayed at came in, and he must have been someone of authority, and he explained who I was like, and I got away. I said, so are you? They'd never seen this uniform before, you know, this tank suit. I was lucky that day.
Do you recall any of the winter fighting of 1944?
No, just the condition of moving up. It was rather a bit hazardous on steel tracks and on icy roads, you know. But no, we seemed to manage okay. We had no problems regards that. I mean, we soon got acclimatised. Man, it was cold, though. I mean, it was even cold in Berlin.
Were there any actions moving up to the Rhine which stand out in your mind?
No, nothing startling. I mean, you know, the Germans did fight harder there than anywhere else because they were on the home ground. There was a particular place, but I can't remember his name, where we came across a German sniper school where they taught officers to... And mind, they were good. If you had your fingers over the top of the turret, they were shut off. But we beat them. Beat everybody we came to, the Germans.
Where were you when the war ended?
Oh, in Berlin. Doing patrols and went down the pits. And that was all we did. We did a battalion guard there. As I tell you before, they were really hot on guards. The Yanks were sitting on the corner on the backside on the stool, guarding, and we had a battalion guard. And this sergeant major, he said, you haven't done guard for a long time, have you? I said, no, I was only answerable to Morg, you know, nobody else. He said, you better be on orderly sergeant tomorrow. So I had to line this guard up, you know. And the orderly officer came alongside me and he said, what have I seen next, lad? He's worse than me. I had to keep repeating all the words of command to him. And, I mean, the German people watching, you know, you feel awful. But they came back.
How did the German people receive you?
Quite well. Quite well. But they were too, I think, the more concerned in living rather than having any hatred. I mean, this German I stopped at a farm. I went into the barn, put me carrier in, there was 100... German soldier with an officer. He gave me the bed. The German officer had to sleep in the barn. And the first thing this farmer said to me, he said, why do the Germans always fight the English? He said, we should fight the Russians. He used to say, schlecht, schlecht. That's a German word for bad, the Russians. He's dead set on getting us to fight the Russians. I said, no, they're our allies. You know, at the time, of course, they were. We'd never won the war without them. That's a fact.
Were you ever involved in looking for SS?
No. They did come down in Sittard while we were there, but they were supposed to be dressed as women. We never found them, you know. I mean, how can you differentiate unless you speak, you know? I mean, we had military police did then kind of jobs. We wanted to look out for them, you know. But there's nothing special about them.
So in Berlin, you were doing guard duties?
Guard duties mostly, and as I say, with the carriers, you're just going on a patrol. I remember I went to the Brandenburg Gate, because there's no four zones in India. You could go up from one to the other. And a hell of a scatter when I got there, because it was a black market. The Russians flew, the Germans flew. And
how did the black market operate?
Oh, well, you know, butter. Give you butter for woodbines. You could get anything for woodbines. You know, I got my teeth done for woodbines in Berlin. You could live with a woman for a week for a pack of woodbines if you were so inclined, you know. They were starving. I mean, I'd see people in fur coats looking in the dustbin to see what they could eat. And although they were enemy, for somehow they didn't come across as an enemy, if you get what I mean. They came across as civilians. And you say, look at them poor devils, starving, you know. Well, that's the way it appeared to me. I couldn't hate them.
I mean, did you know whether the Allies were attempting to feed them?
No, that sort of thing didn't concern us. I mean, you hadn't time to think of them kind of things, you know. Just had normal duties, they just carried on, and what the only difference was there's no shells up on top of your bombs, you know. the war had finished and that was it. But
what about fraternisation, did you?
Oh yes, we did that. We weren't supposed to, mind, but in the end, we came down. In fact, I had a girl myself in Berlin, and she followed me down to Una when she came to Benka, that's on the railway track. And when we got to Una, I was sent home to be demobilised, and she couldn't come, which she thought. Unfortunately, I got engaged. Unfortunately, she put no address on, somewhere in the Yankee zone. And of course, I couldn't ride back, and that was the last of it. So, well, if you married a younger, I wouldn't know, but it's funny how things turn out. I mean, to all intents and purposes, we could have been married, you know. Can you last? I think myself she'd been one of the Hitler youth, because a Berlin gave her away, you know, the military Berlin. She didn't slouch anything like that. In fact, I gave her the uniform, and she had a dyed navy blue, and she embroidered some leaves on the things, and she was quite smart, really, you know.
Did you have any jobs of looking for people who were strong Hitler supporters?
No, I didn't concern us. No, I mean, they had the army, what do they call them, the MDS, commissioner? Civilians came over, you know, and they look over those jobs and...
commission?
Yes, the commission. We just did our army routine, you know. Well, I know they were stopping in a big house. I think they called it Victoria Strasse, off the Kurfürstendamm Strasse. The whole battalion. But that's all. As I say, we did the players, we did the patrols, and that was it. I mean, we were just somebody to feed them, dear. They didn't care much, you know, once the war was over. I think they wanted to get shot of us.
You were mentioned in dispatches. What did you do for that?
Well, as I told you, that this was at Mersey Mathura. It was the only place I can think of where I was the last vehicle to leave. And as I left, I saw this, I think it was either corporal or the sergeant, behind us, wasn't running, he was trotting. And he had his rifle in the tail position. His overcoat folded on his arm with six buttons upwards, shining like the mirrors, you know. So I stopped and I picked him up. And a little further on, there's a truck, three-tonner, stuck in a shell hole. How he got in there, I don't know. So I got out, I put my tow chain on, they all emptied the carrier and got in the truck and I pulled it out. Now, there must have been an officer in that truck to see the action. Because when we got back to the El Alamein, this Gallen, he got the DCM. And I got the mentioned in dispatches. Eh? But after the war, they had no recollection of it. 4 years, I never got it. I was told at the time, when I got the York Lees, that I'd get the medal after the war. I just blamed and forgot about it, you see. And it was when I came to claim this medal, I didn't get it. And they said that the committee who handled these things had been, you know, disbanded long ago. So I just left it, didn't I? You know.
So when were you demobbed then, Mr. Ferguson?
Well, 1945. Was it 46?
And you came back from Germany to England.
Uh-huh.
And where were you demobbed?
Oh, no, that's a castle something, but I couldn't say where. I know I got a grey suit. I had about 20 years. I remember that. I handed me overcoat and kept. Oh, was it me? Yes, I handed me overcoat and me uniform. That was it. I got the grey suit. And I forget what else now. Something else. Wasn't a lot there, but it, you know, kept it going for the time, seeing that things were uncooping, you know. We didn't think about it. Well, out, that was it, that was the main thing. And when I came back home, I was entitled to 118 days leave, demarcation leave or something. I went straight to work, back on the buses. You know, I had a week off. I got so sick, wandering around. Yeah, I mean, you don't know what to do with yourself after such a... A traumatic experience.
Did you find it difficult settling down after so many years in the army?
Not a thing, no. I just came back normal. As I say, you're glad to get out, but once you're out, you just can't believe it. I mean, you're more or less your own boss in the army, if you get what I mean. Once you're off parade, you can pick yourself what you do, where you go, this, that and other. You're more or less looked up to by civilians. But I remember going through Brussels. When we liberated Brussels, I was driving the German half-track, you know. And I had a chamber pot on the headlight with a victory sign on the front. And as we passed through all these thousands of people, the women were going, psst, psst. Yeah. I just thought it was funny. I know if I'd gotten out, I'd have been mobbed, because that's the way things were. They're so glad to see us, the Belgians in Brussels. That alive, yes. And yet the Dutch people were better people, in a sense. Because this family I stopped at in Gillane, I think he was some sort of a pit official. And he didn't want us at first, but there's me and a fellow called Sergeant Moss. He's a PT sergeant in Liverpool somewhere I live. He saw those slices, so he thought I'd love it anyway. We went up to the bathroom to make a meal. And he come up, "What you doing?" I said, "We're having something to eat. My wife will do that for you." And you know, when we left, he was as nice as night. His wife, she cried when I left.
Why were they so cool in the beginning?
I don't know. I have a feeling they might have known the Germans a bit better than they should have. I got that impression, you know. He wasn't an official in the pit. He might have had some stand and other, you know. But then I thought, well, it's like the British taking over the homes, kind of stuff. I mean, I wouldn't like it. You wouldn't, would you? Not really. But under the circumstances, we had somewhere to stop, and we stopped in these homes. And as I said, towards the end, when the nappy used to come round, about once a week, I used to buy cigarettes, give them to him. I used to buy tins of food, give them to her. And the bands, chocolate, you know. And I was accepted as one of the family. I still have one of the photos. You might have seen it with the two bands holding, hanging onto us. And she climbed and left.
When you were demobbed, did you have a medical before you came out of the army?
I don't think so. I can't remember. No. Talking about medicals reminds me of a funny thing at Tiverton when Colonel Percy was the boss. We were all lined up outside this private house, all with our trousers up. Inspection. His wife come up and stepped out of the car. I don't know who was embarrassed the most. I saw her, you know. It never happened anymore, though.
So that after all these years in the forces and the army, you finally got back onto the buses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And have you followed your, kept your connection with the regiment, the battalion?
No, just for the 8th Army Association, which features everybody who took part in the 8th Army, you know. I've joined those. No, I just let it die. I mean, when you're on the buses, you know, you haven't got a lot of free time. Well, you have, but it's awkward times. You know, you're either off and people's in bed, or you finish late, you know, and or you keep going best part of the day. You hadn't much of a social life on buses, believe it or not. No.